I'm going to shoot this shot perfectly, or I'm not going to shoot it at all. And you had a very specific plan on exactly how you were going to do that.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. All right, guys, on this episode, episode 87, we have Joel Turner from Iron Mind Hunting. I'm sure that you, and I know that I, have made shots that we wish we could take back. Sometimes it's just on a target, or sometimes it's on an animal. We pull the trigger maybe when we don't want to. We rush the shot, maybe we can't hold on target, maybe it is the dreaded target panic that you've heard Steve and I talk about in previous episodes. Well, Joel is not only a sniper and a competitive shooter, he's also a backcountry hunter, and he has dove in deep into this topic and really aimed to understand what goes on with the shot process, what goes on mentally, what goes on in our physiology. And he's not only found some answers on to what happens, but how we can overcome things such as target panic and shoot with more control. So this episode is all about that. It's sort of a great diagnostic tool. It's a great discussion. It's bound to help you be more controlled and more accurate with your shot process in this upcoming season. So we hope you enjoy it. Before we dive into our discussion with Joel, I want to thank B Browsered on iTunes for leaving us a great review. He mentioned that not only is he enjoying this show, which we're thankful for, but that he's thankful for the Elk Hunting University that we've talked about. So this is from our friends at Elk 101 and Corey Jacobson. Hopefully you've heard us talk about it. But if you go check out elk101.com/online course, you can learn more about this Elk Hunting University. It is quite literally everything you need to know, maybe even more than you want to know about elk hunting. So it's preseason, it's during the hunt, it's tactics, it's scouting, it's even how to pack your pack. Even Steve has videos on there. So this is written content, audio content, video content, hours and hours and hours of everything you want to know about elk hunting. And if you're interested, if you check it out, it looks like something that you'd benefit from, be sure to use the coupon code BACKCOUNTRY, which is going to save you $10 on the Elk Hunting University at elk101.com. Okay, let's dive right into the show with Joel Turner. Joel, thank you so much for joining us on the Hunt Backcountry podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Man, we're super excited. Steve and I have been, we've kind of mentioned target panic on and off on the podcast. We've talked a little bit about some of the things that we've done to help with it. We've also talked about some of the ways that we struggle with it. So we're excited to talk to you tonight with your experience, your history, and all that you've put into it, and really get a bit deeper than what we've covered on the surface. So we're stoked.
What have you, and I've never chatted with you fellas before, so what have you guys dealt with, and how are you working through it?
Steve, you're kind of in the middle of it, right? Do you want to talk about it? Or
yeah, I mean, it's been well documented here on the podcast of my target panic struggles. Mine's just creeped in on me to the point where, like, last year, I mean, I had, like, I remember going camping, and I took a 3D target, and I literally was, like, I had so much panic trying to shoot 40 yards that I was like hitting the trigger before the pins were even on the animal. I set it up, missed three times in a row, and then just put the target away. And it got really, really bad. And I've been farted around with thumb releases and stuff like that a little bit here and there, which like fix it for a couple weeks and then it comes back. And I haven't made the full commitment to switch to a thumb trigger for hunting. Uh-huh. So I just kind of struggle with that. I just, you know, I have a tough time thinking something in my pocket, and then I just want it on my wrist in case I need to make a quick shot. But yeah, for me, it's my pin just wants to sit a foot high and left, and it doesn't matter what I do. I cannot get it down there. And the second I get it, like even if I do get it down there, it's wobbling all over the place. And I just have like this, you know, it's like this tension's building up in your finger that you need to squeeze that trigger any second, you know. And I can, what it pisses me off so much, because I can literally put my finger behind the trigger and hold all day long, just kind of float right where I want to. And then the second that finger goes on the trigger, something triggers. And I just, like, yeah, I have a mini panic attack and I have to punch it off as fast as I can. Which drives me nuts, because I shot for a decade without any issues. I mean, I used to be able to just shoot lights out, and now it's definitely hampered my shooting abilities.
So what's the, give me a progression of this target panic. Did it all of a sudden happen, or did it progress?
No, I think it was a progression. I think I used to be really good about not, about just squeezing the trigger. You know, I never had any issues. I just put my pin on there and let it float and just started squeezing. And I mean, I used to shoot really, really good. And I think it just was a slow, I think it was like a couple, 2 or 3 year regression of just like learning how to just basically taught myself how to punch the trigger, but I could still punch the trigger and shoot pretty dang well. Right. And then it was like 1 year where it got like, man, I don't think I realized I had full blown target panic, but I knew my shooting was going downhill. And then last year was the year that it was just, like I said, I just flat out shoot like one or two arrows and I put the bow down and walk away and come back a few days later, you know?
Right. Yeah. So when you talk about your shooting, you know, you're no different than me or anybody, right? So it's your mind is always working against you in the realm of shooting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's when you talk about your own shooting, you know, that used to be able to shoot lights out. Well, you're talking about the results of your shot instead of the process that you got yourself in. Mm. Right. Because yeah. if you, we all pick up a bow, and let's say the first compound you pick up with a release, you draw back and you put your pin on that target, and then, like you said, you start working through that release. But the first time you shoot it with that, you probably pressed the trigger like you would a fine rifle trigger, right? You mm-hmm. added pressure to that thing 1 ounce at a time. And you just that first trigger press, you were probably able to stop it, right? Because you were very in tune with it.
Yeah.
The problem is that the second time you pressed the trigger, you shortcutted that whole thing, right? So you drew back and you put your pin on it and you started through the trigger and your mind had already formulated motor programs against this explosion. And so you gave it the last millimeter, you gave it a little extra, right? Mm-hmm. And you didn't see any difference in your impact point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you were for 10 years. But in that 10 years, you were making yourself more and more and more efficient. So instead of the last millimeter popping through that trigger, you started to pop through it as soon as you touched the trigger. And then sometimes you shot it without even touching the trigger, right?
Yeah,
So it's just a progression. It's not – your mind doesn't see it as a bad thing. It sees it as you becoming more efficient, and that has always been the goal – of all of your learning in movements.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem in shooting is that this movement that you're doing, this slight minute movement that's only a couple millimeters, has an explosion at the end of it, right? Mm-hmm. So the core problem in shooting is that your mind will not allow you to cause your body impact as a surprise. But that's what we're all chasing. We're all chasing the surprise shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know that in that 10 years, it wasn't really a surprise, was it?
Definitely. And I still, that was something that I like, even right now, I just got done shooting for half an hour in the backyard, and I can get, as that was a question I wanted to ask you, because I can get the pin where I want it, and then I try to like take a breath and start squeezing, but it's like I have that, okay, the pin's there, the shot needs to go off, you know, relatively fast, because it's only going to stay there for so long.
Do you think, Steve, you're just not comfortable with letting it float anymore, or like letting that natural movement happen? Like you're just trying to be so dead?
Yeah, you know, one thing I think I used to be able to hold a lot steadier, because I don't remember seeing that much pin movement. Because in my backyard, I was just shooting 30 yards, and I'm getting, I'd say, an inch and a half to 2 inches of movement on the target. And maybe I need to, I've tried some bow balance stuff, but that, you know, it's moving around quite a bit for me.
So just in what you're telling me there, Steve, your aim is encompassing your mind in your shot, right? So you're trying to be steady.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to break this to you, but you can't be steady. You understand that it floats, right?
Yeah.
But if you truly understand the system, the feedback system that you're looking at, and that's all you're really doing is looking at it, it's called visual proprioception. And that is the same visual feedback system that you use when you drive. When you're driving, you see a yellow line and a white line. And when you get visual feedback that your vehicle is veering slightly to the left, that sends a signal, and then you auto-correct it back to the right. And as soon as you get the proper feedback, you will then stop steering. And you don't have to think about that, right? Mm-hmm. You're constantly moving that steering wheel. But that's constantly driven by visual feedback. You cannot hold your pin steady. So what you have to do is you have to completely disregard the aim. And by that I mean you have to trust that you have no control over it other than through your eyes. I mean, do you have your bow with you right now?
I don't. Yeah, it's downstairs.
Okay, do you have a pin?
Yeah.
Okay. Take the cap off the pin or click the little writing implement out, hold it at full extension, and put it on some small spot on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
See it? Do you see it moving?
Yep.
Notice that no matter which way it moves, its next movement is always back to the center. Do you see that?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is visual proprioception, right? Why did you not lock high and left? Why did you just put it right on the thing without even thinking about it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because there's no explosion. Right?
Right.
If you are thinking about aiming in your shot and trying to be steady, or at least just trying to get the pin on the target, your mind will never let you do that, because you getting your pin on the target equals an explosion. That's why it doesn't ever let you get there, right? So what it does is it holds you off. And when your pin is off the target, it's the exact same thing as if your finger's behind the trigger. So, you know, you draw back and it's there, or it's up above and to the left of the target, and you're calm as a cucumber, baby, right? As long as it's up there and not on the spot. But then what does your mind do? It links motor programs, because it's not going to allow you to cause it impact as a surprise. So it's going to link the motor programs of dropping your bow and punching the trigger. They become linked so that your mind can brace you for the impact of the bow going off. And people like to say all the time, well, you know, I'm not affected by impact. Well, your conscious mind might not be, but your subconscious damn sure is, right? I mean, if I was to kick you in the chest and knock you over, you would catch yourself, right? That is the response that we're fighting. Central nervous system, self-preservation responses. That's what we're constantly fighting and shooting. So we got to have a plan on how you're going to override this. Now, just like when you put your pin on that spot, it was really, you know, it was a no-brainer. You just stuck your pin on there and no problem. Mm-hmm. If your finger's behind the trigger, same thing. Draw back and aim. Get it done. No slow movement to target. And then just watch it to keep it, because that's all the control you have. That's job number one in your shot. but that has nothing to do with you shooting an arrow. So you've really got to separate the two jobs. Job number one is to draw back and aim, get it done, and then watch it to keep it. That's why you were able to shoot decent in those 10 years, because you always got job number one done, right?
Yeah.
So you were pretty good. The problem was is that when you shoot that way, when you punch that trigger a little bit, you can only get as good as your pre-ignition movements. Those little movements that your body or that your mind puts into your shot at the moment of release. So that's when you have to really buckle down and learn how to do job two, which is the most important, which we'll talk about here in just a second.
Okay.
You with me so far?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Stop me if I start rambling. This is like my life, so.
Yeah, it was good. It was great to dive into. It was like an intervention moment there.
One other thing I have is the second my finger goes in front of that trigger, it's almost impossible for me to stop the shot. Okay, I'm going to put my finger on the trigger and I'm going to hold on the target for 10 seconds and not shoot and let down. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't do that. Well, no. I'll go like 10, 9, and all of a sudden I shoot.
Right.
It's because
your pin being on the target has become the stimulus for your shot.
Yeah.
And you always, since the second trigger press that you ever did, you've always used what's called an open loop control system. In your mind, there are two control systems that govern all your movements. The first one is an open loop control system. That's a control system that is used for automatic movements or movements that have become automatic through repetition and life experience and such. So in that open loop control system, the movement is too fast for you to stop in the middle of the movement. It's too fast for you to gain feedback in the movement. It's like a baseball swing, right? A baseball bat swing. You know, once you start that baby going, man, you can't stop it in the middle.
Yeah.
So, and you know, think about serving a volleyball or hitting a tennis ball. Those are all movements that are open loop control systems. Those are motor programs that are too fast for you to gain feedback within it. So, you know, you can't stop that trigger press because you're not moving it at a rate that you can evaluate. You have no idea, and don't take offense in this stuff, but you have no idea of whether this shot's going to be good or not.
No, yeah.
Because you have no evaluation in your shot. Your shot activation movement, meaning your finger movement, is too fast for you to stop. It's an open loop control system. So you have to learn how to put it into the other control system, which is a closed loop control system. And you know, in my online course and in my live clinics and stuff, that's where I teach people how to actually do that. What I do is I have you sign your name. And you know, your signature has become an automatic motor program, right? You don't think about it, you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's some kind of scribble, scratch, whatever it may be, right? But I give you very specific parameters about there's three lines. Your capital's got to touch the top and the bottom. Your lowercase letters have to touch the middle and the bottom. Don't cross any line you're not supposed to and touch every line perfectly, right? Mm. And then I tell people, I say, you get one chance to do this right. And you have to write it like your life depends on it. And do you think anybody writes it perfectly the first time?
Probably not.
They don't, because they don't make decisions to do it. They do it and they try to do good, right? Instead of making a decision like, okay, I've been given the parameters for this. I'm going to write my name perfectly, or I'm not going to write it at all. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't make that decision. And that's the decision that has to be made to put your mind in a closed loop control system. A closed loop control system, it's a movement. You're deciding to choose a slow enough motor program that you can gain feedback within it. Like, think about when you write your name, right? You're writing this, you're writing your name, and now I'm talking about moving slow enough that you can slow it down to the nth degree to where you can touch that line perfectly. And then you start on another line. You're going down, get closer to line, slow your movement down, right? You can modify your movement within the movement. That's a closed loop control system. So, you know, when was the last time that you stepped up on the stake with your bow and you said, I'm going to shoot this shot perfectly, or I'm not going to shoot it at all? And you had a very specific plan on exactly how you were going to do that mentally. You
know, it's funny because I try to do that as far as like, okay, I'm going to make a good shot this time. I'm going to make a good shot this time. And it just like all that auto, you know, right. My auto response just kicks in. I mean, by the time I draw and I start aiming, all of a sudden I switch over to that open loop system or whatever. Yep. And bam, the shot goes off.
Here's the problem, though. You say to yourself, I'm going to make a good shot this time, but you don't finish that decision with, or I'm not going to shoot it at all. You don't start the shot with options, right? That separates professional shooters from non-professional shooters is they have options. Like in this tournament I just shot, I let down like 20 times in 2 days. Because I make that decision every single shot. You cannot make me shoot an uncontrolled arrow. I will not do it. I've done that enough in my life. I will not do that, right? So my original decision for every shot is I will shoot this shot perfectly or I will not shoot it at all. Because then you start that shot in a process. Right. And like you said originally in your shooting, you used to shoot lights out, right? But that's results. I don't care what you have for results. I only care, are you able to stay in process and shoot a controlled arrow? Because if you can, the results are going to be there.
We want to thank the good folks at First Light for sponsoring the Hunt Backcountry podcast. You've heard us talk about it. We've been using it. First Light gear for years, well before they were sponsoring this show, and we just love their lineup. We love what they have to offer in terms of their merino wool products as well as their outerwear. A piece that I can never get away from, it goes on every hunt it seems, is their Uncompagre Puffy. It's not only lightweight and warm, it's also durable. The synthetic insulation will stand up to weather. The DWR coating will resist water. It's just a great all-around piece. It's always with me for those chilly early mornings or late nights or windy times on the ridge. So check out the Uncompagre Puffy and the entire First Light lineup at firstlight.com. While you're there, be sure to check out their brand new for 2017 Cypher pattern, which complements their other proprietary pattern, Fusion. Both are great, both super effective. And they also offer gear in ASAT as well as a variety of solid colors as well. So go check it out. Good folks that not only support this show, not only support hunting, but support conservation in a major way and are working very hard to guarantee that our way of life continues for future generations. So thanks to First Light.
Joel, could you elaborate further on, I'm sure there's some guys who are trying to figure out the difference of what you're talking about with, you're saying you're not concerned with results, yet you're saying I'm going to shoot this perfect or not at all. And I get what you're going for, but I want to hear more about the difference of results downrange versus controlling a perfect shot, obviously before the arrow reaches the target. So talk a bit more about what you mean by you're going to shoot this perfect or not at all when you don't know what perfect means because the arrow hasn't left yet.
Right. So perfect means that you are controlling your shot activation movement and now you're moving. Imagine this in a trigger activation, right? You're moving this trigger slow enough that you can stop it anywhere within the movement. Now, if you can truly do that, then you are in control. You are truly in a closed loop control system. So when I say that, I'm going to shoot this shot perfectly or I'm not going to shoot it at all. That means that I'm going to get through the two jobs in my shot. That means I'm going to draw back and aim, get it done, watch it to keep it. That's job number one. Job number two is to put my concentration into the movement that makes my bow go off. Right? So this is a very specific blueprint for the controlled shot. That's what I teach people how to do. Right? I teach people exactly what it, not only what it feels like to shoot a controlled arrow, but what is your actual thought process when you do that? What are you thinking about? You should be thinking about your shot activation movement. What are you saying? What words are you telling yourself during your shot to direct your concentration? At what rate were you saying those words? Because that's going to dictate the movement speed. Question number three, could I have stopped it? Was I so involved in my shot activation movement that I could have stopped it at any moment? And then finally, what decisions did I make to get myself into this shot process for this one shot? These shots are like a package, right? That have to be carefully wrapped and put together. Every one shot is its own package, right? So when I say that, that original decision, I will shoot this shot perfectly or I will not shoot it at all. That means, I mean, that it's a very liberating process when you think of it that way, because it starts you into this shot, not results-based, but process-based. And it gives you the options like, hey, you know what? Nobody's got a gun to my head making me shoot this shot. But if you don't start a shot with that decision, then your subconscious has already cocked the hammer, man. Mm-hmm. It's got a gun to its own head, basically, right? So you have to be very process-based, but it all starts with decisions. And to stay in that and make that decision come to fruition, there's other decisions that have to be made in specific moments in your shot. And, you know, we can talk about that as well. So.
Yeah.
Where you want to go now, fellas?
Well, one thing I think is interesting, I'm not familiar with the steps that you go through or your curriculum, anything like that. But one of the questions I had specifically, you just touched on. So while we're here, I would love to hear more about it. So the question I had written down, which ties perfectly into something you mentioned, was what should a shooter be thinking or telling themselves before, during, and through the shot sequence? So you talked about what are you telling yourself. My question is, what should we be telling ourselves?
Okay, so the original decision, again, is just verbalizing a decision, right? I'm going to shoot this shot perfectly or I'm not going to shoot it at all. That's a verbalization of a decision. But when you get into that second job of the shot, which is putting your concentration into the movement that makes your bow go off, that's where this mantra or speech comes in. Because concentration truly runs through speech. And, you know, if you're not talking yourself through the shot, then you're allowing the subconscious to run it. And it will not allow you to cause your body impact as a surprise. So if you allow that subconscious to tell itself when to let go, it's always going to link recoil bracing. It's always going to link those pre-ignition movements to your shot, and that will deviate your point of impact. So, you know, the question is, what should somebody be saying? What should they be thinking? Well, those are the same thing, right? They are linked. What you say is what you think. That's how our mind works. So to direct your concentration into that movement of your back, right? I don't want you activating your shot with your finger. I want you to activate it with your back. So once you've got job one done and you're just watching your pin, because you know that's the only control you have over it, is to watch it. Once that's done, then you take a deep hook on the trigger. Like I'm talking the pad between your first and second knuckle or in the crease of your second knuckle on your index finger or your middle finger, whichever one you want. You take a deep hook on that thing. You set an initial pressure on it depending on your release, right? So if you're shooting like a Scott, it's a phenomenal, very robust release, but you can't set spring tension on it. So you, if you're going to shoot back tension with that, you have to be very light in your initial pressure. If you were to shoot something like a Carter-like Mike, that is a release that you can set spring tension in the trigger, not just travel, but spring tension. I mean, you can make it hard, like it's 10, 12 pounds to make this thing go off, but you can't feel it going off. That's a release that you can really dig that hook into for good, strong, robust initial pressure. So we've drawn back and we've aimed, got it done. Now we're just watching to keep it. Then we set that hook. And once we have set that hook and we've set our initial pressure, that's when we start our shot activation movement, which is that expansion, right? So now you're expanding, kind of opening your chest, and you're bringing that, I mean, you're pulling your bow apart kind of with your whole body. But now you're moving big muscles. You can feel the movement, right? So if you can feel the movement, you can evaluate the movement. So now, if that movement is going perfectly and you're talking yourself through it, I have people say, keep pulling, right? Keep pulling, keep pulling, keep pulling, keep pulling. As they're increasing that pressure, they can evaluate on if they're feeling the right thing or not. If they're not, nobody's got a gun to your head. Get off the trigger and let it down. That is a huge moment of exponential growth for a shooter to actually make the decision in a shot that they truly believed that they were going to shoot. To see the red flags come up, right? Like if they're drawn back and they draw back and aim, get it done, watch to keep it. They set that deep hook and they're like, okay, here I go. Keep pulling, keep pulling, keep pulling, keep pulling. Man, when's this thing going to go off? Right? If you have that thought of when's this thing going to go off, big red flag should come popping up in your head. Error, error, right? This is not what I'm supposed to be thinking about. Because as soon as you have that thought, when's this thing going to go off? You just broke your concentration on the movement, right? So get off the trigger and let it down. Think about how much more control it takes to do that than it did to just give it that little bit extra. Because who's going to know, right? Who's going to know? But the problem is that you just let your subconscious punch another one for you, and it loves you for it. Because on that one, it was able to time it. It was able to give those pre-ignition movements. And, you know, maybe you hit the X, maybe you didn't. But you should know damn well inside that it wasn't a perfectly controlled shot. So once you start into your movement, you've got two options. Either the bow goes off, or you detect an error in your thought process and you let it down. When you've got that specific of a plan, it's very calming to your mind. So, you know, that's what you should be saying is whatever movement you need to make that shot go off. If it's pulling, if you're shooting a hinge, it might be a rotation. You know, whatever it is, whatever the movement is. For me on my stick bow, I use what I've invented called a grip sear, right? So I've got my ring finger hooked on the edge of my riser on my bow grip hand, right? So my mantra is keep pressing. So I draw back and aim, get it done, watch to keep it. My fingernail is hooked on the edge of my riser. And I simply talk myself through that movement. Keep pressing, keep pressing, keep pressing. I'm adding pressure to my ring finger ounce per ounce until it finally pops off my riser. When it pops off my riser, the mechanoreceptors in the skin cells of my finger send a signal to my brain. My brain then sends the release motor program. So basically when that thing pops, there's a slight pause, like a hundredth of a second, maybe. It'll pop off there and then poof, off the shot goes. You don't have to worry about that with a mechanical release. You just stay in that movement until one of two things happens. Either you have an error in your thought process, get off the trigger and let it down, or your bow goes off. That is the plan on how to get around this target panic. Because, you know, Steve, what you're doing is 100% natural. Mm-hmm. That happens to every single archer. I mean, this week I'm going to be going to Total Archery Challenge. I'm going to see a lot of trigger punching going on, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, there's no doubt about it, because, I mean, I could go anywhere in the world and I would see the same thing. All archers are dealing with this issue. All shooters of anything deal with this issue. We at rifles, pistols, bows, stick bows, slingshots, it doesn't matter. If it causes somewhat of an explosion, your mind, if it can time the explosion, it will time the explosion.
We've talked so much about the mental side of things, and just in this last segment we talked or heard you speak of releases a little bit, and one thing I wanted to hear about was, when it comes to, you know, curing target panic, how much of it is the physical versus the mental, and how much does release aid choice factor into curing target panic?
The entire archery industry is built around target panic. When you think of it this way, the first release that most people shoot is an index finger trigger. And then once they start punching that, they want to use a different digit, so they go to a thumb button. And once they start punching that, they go to a hinge. And once they start punching that, they go to a tension activator release. But when you talk about releases, think about how easy it is to punch an index finger and you're still pretty good, right? Then you go to you want to increase your accuracy, so you go to a thumb button. And because it's a different digit and that thumb's a little bit more dumb than your index finger, hasn't been trained its whole life, but it takes about a week and people start punching that. And then they get a hinge, right? And you'll see they're working on the hinge and you'll see the rotation of the hinge, and then the rotation stops. And then they punch it with their whole hand. Those are all pre-ignition movements. Those are all the subconscious timing. If you don't understand the science of what's going on in your mind, you can punch anything. But people try to fix this mental problem through mechanical and physical means. And they all end up at the tension activator release, like a Stan Element or a Carter Evolution, right? Where you just, it's got a safety on it. So you set it however many pounds above your holding weight, you push the safety down, you draw your bow back and aim, then all you got to do is let the safety off and pull. If you don't pull, it's never going to go off, right? But you see people, and I set, when I have people that are having trouble, I'll explain the entire science, and if they won't make a decision to actually work through a trigger with their release that they brought to the clinic, then I'll put them on that Stan Element. And I'll set it to where it's an act of Congress to get it to go off, right? So they draw back and they aim and they're kind of timid with it and they let off that safety and they're just sitting there, right? And then I'm like, you got to start pulling or it's never going to go off. So they start pulling, right? And they start pulling and then they start shaking and now it's just increasing, right? And they start to grit their teeth, right? And you see all the facial expressions are going and they're shaking like a dog crapping tacks, man. And they're just trying to get after it. And I say, okay, push the safety back in and let it down. And I say, what were you thinking about during that shot? Man, I was thinking about pulling. I said, welcome, right? Yeah. Welcome to controlled process shooting. You must be thinking about the movement that makes your bow go off. So then I'll start to back that off a little bit at a time, right? To where they're pulling like crazy, boom, and then it finally goes off as a surprise. Then they get to feel what a true surprise break feels like. And then I start asking, what decisions did you make? Well, I knew I had to pull, so I just told myself I was going to stay in it. Or I wasn't going to do it, right? there you go. There's that original decision. I will shoot this shot perfectly, or I will not shoot it at all. And then I'll move them to a hinge or their index finger trigger, whatever. You must be able to run them all. You should be able to look at a release. If you understand what the triggering mechanism is in that release, you should be able to strap that thing on your wrist or grab onto it, draw back and aim, get it done, watch to keep it, and then closed loop movement until it goes off or you detect an error in your thought process. It's really that simple. It's not easy because you are working against your central nervous system, but it is simple, right?
And can you define have the shot go off perfectly? Because and that just incites target panic in my head, right? Like, what is perfect? Do I got to hit the quarter that I'm aiming at, or do you define that for yourself? Is missing by 3 inches still perfect shot, or is it not the result at all? Is it just the surprise release?
It's not the result at all.
Okay.
It's only your ability to stay in process, because the ultimate goal is a zero input shot with no pre-ignition movements. If you shoot a surprise, I mean, do you guys shoot rifles at all?
Yep.
So if you shoot rifles, you know that if you have any pre-ignition movements in that rifle, you're never going to hit anything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you got a target at 800 yards, if you have any pre-ignition movement, you're going to be way off that thing, right? So, but we don't put that same science and those same decisions in our archery shot. A perfect shot for me is one that is run perfectly in process. I don't give a damn where it goes. Now, it's going to go in the, if I do my process, it's going to go in the middle. Why wouldn't it? I haven't done anything to deviate its path, right? I haven't done anything to deviate the point of impact. I don't have any pre-ignition movements in there. So now we start to shoot a zero input shot. Now our groups come down to nothing because you're shooting a perfectly controlled arrow every single time. One perfectly controlled arrow at a time. Right? And then you can start to shoot the difference of a follow-away versus a non-follow-away. You start to shoot the difference in different sights. An 010 pin as opposed to an 029 pin. You can now shoot the potential of your equipment. But if you have pre-ignition movements in your shot, you can only shoot to the potential of your pre-ignition movements. You can only shoot to the consistency of your little bow grab that you do that you never see. Why is it that we never see these things? We don't see pre-ignition movements in bows because there's no safety on a bow. It goes off every single time. But you see it all the time in rifles. You hand somebody a big old nuclear magnum, right? And say, whoo-hoo, hold on to this bad boy. But you've got the safety on. Or maybe you never loaded it. And when they yank the trigger on that thing, you see the eyes close, the head go down, the body come to center. You see all those movements in it. Mm-hmm. Because the safety was on and it didn't go off. That never happens with a bow. All those movements are always masked by the bow going off. So you really have to know what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I analyze people's shots. I mean, that's basically my life. So I watch people shoot all the time, and it's the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, it sounds like it so much comes back to trusting, you know, that you don't have to aim and hold perfect. You know, you have to trust that example you gave of holding the pin and it's going to come back to center. Because to forget or not be concerned with the downrange result and only be focused on the process, you have mm-hmm. to trust that you're going to get back to center subconsciously.
Yeah, you have to. That's only job number one, and that's all the control you have over it, is just watching it to keep it. And that's a hard thing for some people to get over. Mm-hmm. But until you get over that, you're always going to be letting your subconscious run it. I do a drill that where I have somebody get in like a pistol shooting stance and I just have them put their thumb up as a front sight and I tell them to aim at something on a distant wall or whatever. And then I start tapping their hands, right? And the first time I tap their hands, there's no movement and you see the recoil, it hit the body and everything. The second time, their hands always come out to meet me, right? Because I'm tapping their hands. And they, as soon as, after one impact, just like that first time you shot a bow or a rifle or a pistol, after that one time, your body formulates all these motor programs to counteract this explosion or this impact, right? So I hit the hands once, I hit them again and again and again, and then I miss them. When that person thought I was going to hit their hand, but I don't, then you see this big drop in their hands. And that's just all pre-ignition movements that are perfectly timed through the eyes. Your shot stimulus cannot be your vision. Use your vision more wisely by letting it do visual proprioception, give you the feedback that you need. But don't let that feedback be the stimulus for your shot.
Interesting. Do you preach focusing on the pin or on the target?
Well, I've preach focusing on the system. They both have to be fairly clear, because if you have total focus on the pin, your target is blurry and it won't be able to always come back to center because it can't see the center.
Okay.
If the target is crystal clear and the pins are a total blur, again, it can't see as finite. I would rather do that than nothing, but it can't be as finite. But if you get them both, they will never both be in total focus. But if you get them as close to same focal plane as you can, right? And you can shift your eyes to target, to pins, and you'll see the difference. And then there's kind of a midpoint focus where you're watching the system, if you will, right? You're watching the whole sight picture. Say it's a 40-yard shot. You know your 40-yard is your orange pin or whatever it is, right? And it's on the side of that bull elk. The bull elk's going to be pretty clear, especially in stress, high-stress situations. So your target's always a little bit more clear, but your pin's got to be clear enough to where you can put it where you need it. So that's – I preach more of a midpoint focus than one or the other.
Along that, is there any tips for increasing the focus outside? I mean, from a hunting application where you're not going to put in a verifier or a clarifier?
That just depends on your eyes, right? There's a phenomenon out there called the quiet eye principle. And some people are born with it and some people are not. And they did a bunch of studies on tactical operators and what they see in high stress events. And when it comes down to actually shooting a shot, what do they see? And how much movement do they have in their sight? So some people's visual proprioception is very good. I mean, you don't have much sight movement at all or perceived sight movement. Others have to train to do it. Now, people worry way too much about aiming. Your subconscious is way better at it than you're giving it credit for. So I wouldn't be going clarifiers and lenses and all that stuff, man. Just watch the system and execute a zero input shot and you will see phenomenal results. Your results, however, will not be the same as your shot right now. So because when you go to a zero input shot, if you have zeroed your bow, if you've sighted your bow in to a pre-ignition movement, and then you eliminate that pre-ignition movement, you're obviously going to hit somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. Usually for a right-handed shooter, it's a slight collapse at release, which causes right arrows. So when you go zero input, you don't know when your bow's going off. You're just concentrating on the movement that makes it go off. All of a sudden, booyah, the bow goes off. That arrow is usually slightly left and sometimes a little bit higher, depending on what your pre-ignition movement is. So
that's interesting.
There you have my life in a nutshell, fellas.
What are some of the ways that you see guys try to cure target panic, maybe just on their own, that's just incorrect. Or maybe it works for a little bit, but doesn't really resolve the root issue. Like, what are just some of the things that come to mind?
It's usually a release aid change. So they get, like I said, it's the progression. They'll go from a wrist sling to a thumb button to a hinge, eventually to a tension activated release. It was interesting, you know, when you say what works for them or what works for them for a little while. And what I tell people in my clinics, and sometimes it's they look at me like I kicked their puppy or something, right? Because I tell them I'm about 2 hours into explaining the entire science of what's going through your head. And then I say, okay, folks, I got to tell you, this isn't going to work for you, right? And they're like, what, man? I've been listening to this guy for 2 hours and now he's telling me it ain't going to work for me? That is the mentality of most people when taking instruction, right? If you would come to my clinic or you take my online course or whatever, you're like, oh, man, I hope this works for me. And I'll tell you right now, it ain't going to work for you if that's your mentality. There's nothing out there that works for you. You have to work for it. What I teach people is how to do the work. Because if you don't understand the science of how your mind works to overcome this explosion, you're going to be stuck in la-la land trying to fix it with physical means, right? So a lot of people, like I said, will switch releases, or they'll draw back and they'll keep their finger behind the trigger and then they do some big old cobra strike coming from the back row. Right?
The secret ninja.
That bad boy and hammer the crap out of it. Or the count or whatever. But it's all just patches and your mind's like, yep, seen that one before. Right? It's mm-hmm. your subconscious is constantly trying to make you more efficient, not more accurate. When you watch me shoot my stick bow, it is not efficient. People are like, why do you hold your bow so long? It's not that I'm just holding my bow. I'm working through my shot activation movement, right? So it's not efficient, but it is very accurate. So, and when you take that signature test, you actually see what the speed limit is of your closed loop control system. So you see exactly what rate you can move your back muscles and stop it at any moment and stay in control of that. And it's pretty damn slow. But, you know, when you're talking about elk hunting and all this, when people a lot of times will never practice their stop sound, right? The stop sound, whatever sound you make to stop a bull between the trees where you want to shoot him, they never practice the stop sound. So they don't practice making decisions after the stop sound. So their mind instantly, as soon as they stop them with a cow call or I always give them the yo like a bark, right? When they do that, if they never practiced it, man, it just, as soon as you do the stop sound and that bull stops, your mind's like, oh my God, it stopped, right? Here it goes, and it's autopilot, right? And then they forget what pin it needs to be and what day of the week it is and all. They just go into autopilot. They stick some pin on hair and punch the trigger, right? And that's not control. But if you know what this speed limit is and you stop that bull, you know how long it's going to take. And, you know, it's just a reality. Have I had bull elk walk out of my sight picture before? Absolutely. But it means everything to me to be in control of myself shooting at critters, because it took me 13 years to kill a bull elk with my bow. I ain't going back to that place. Right? It wasn't because I couldn't call them in. It's because I could never hit them. I could not keep myself in control. I mean, you talk about target panic. I used to have to hold feet over a target. And then I would just dump my bow and release the string all at once. I mean, I've seen it. I've been there, done it. And, you know, I had to gain control of myself when I first gained control in firearms. I was not a good shot. I was not a good pistol shot. I was not a good rifle shot until I started to have consequences if I wasn't perfect, right? And then once I became a firearms instructor, I had to figure out, how did I do it? How did I get myself in control of my shot? Right. And then there was all the practice, right? I realized that I wasn't practicing the right things. I was always practicing the physicality of it instead of the mentality. Right. Because one of the cures for target panic is blank bail shooting, right? You'll hear that from mm-hmm. a lot of pros. Blank bail, blank bail, blank bail for 6 months, never shoot at a real target, and then those skills will transfer because you're grooving it into the subconscious. Those skills will then transfer to an actual shot. That could not be further from the truth. If that were true, then all a person would have to do is dry fire, right, with their pistol for months. Dry fire, dry fire. And then they'd have one perfect trigger press. And as soon as that thing went booyah, then all of that is out the window. Your mind's like, okay, cool. I got my motor programs. I can conquer this. Now you would say, well, that's not necessarily the same as blank bail, but it is, because in blank bail shooting, you have to realize that your pre-ignition movements are timed through your eyes, right? And as mm-hmm. soon as you either close your eyes or don't aim at anything, think about what that does for you. That allows you to concentrate on your movement. And what most people do in blank bail shooting is they just their goal in blank bail shooting is to get the movement. What does this perfect shot feel like? The problem is there's no transfer of that feel to high stress events. Only the mental skills transfer. So if you are going to blank bail shoot, and that's great for form practice, right? But instead of going, okay, that's what it feels like, you've got to go one step further and go, how did I get that feel? What was I thinking about? What was I saying? Could I have stopped it? What decisions did I make? Then you have the mental blueprint for that controlled shot. Then you take that mental blueprint and put it into the next shot and the next shot. And then you go out and shoot an aimed shot, and then your aim doesn't mean as much. Just draw back and aim. Get it done. And then watch it to keep it. And then you have the mental blueprint on how you got yourself to do that movement. And I can't tell you how liberating it is to have this information, how powerful it is to know that you're going to shoot a controlled shot no matter what. Like, I got drawn for a once-in-a-lifetime moose tag this year in Washington. It's supposedly the best unit in the United States for Shires moose. I'm sure people would argue that, but this unit is phenomenal for Shires moose. Once in a lifetime, I'm going with my stick bow. I could use any weapon, right? But I'm going with my stick bow. And I know that when I get a shot at a critter, at a big old bull moose, I know exactly how it's going to go. There's no way that bull moose can make me shoot an uncontrolled arrow. Yep, he might walk out of my sight picture. So be it. That's the level of determination. And you may think that I'm crazy, but I have an ulterior motive here. But that's the level of determination that must be in these shots if you want to truly control your business and be a professional archer. So, my ulterior motive in this is my other job is as a SWAT sniper, right? So I can't screw that up. I can't go into that shot on a hostage taker and go, gee, I hope this goes well.
Yeah.
I have to know exactly how I'm going to do it. I got to know what decisions I'm going to make. I need to know when specifically in my shot that I'm going to make them, and I need to scientifically know how to carry them out. And, you know, when Steve was originally talking about this decision that he had made, that he's going to make this a perfect shot, right? That's only the first one. That's only the first decision. There are three. If you guys see any pictures of me, you'll see that I wear three rings on my fingers, three black rings. and they indicate they are my reminders of the decisions, the three decisions that must be made in every precision shot. The first one is the original decision. I will shoot this shot perfectly or I will not shoot it at all. The second one is the half draw moment. And this is where I used to fail. You want me to go into this, fellas?
Yeah, that'd be great.
So this is where I used to fail, because in that 13-year span when I'm calling in all these bulls and I'm trying to kill them and I'm not hitting the barn door, I used to say to myself as that bull's coming in, okay, Turner, this time you're going to do it right. That was my original decision, but that original decision does not last throughout an entire shot. You have to bring yourself into the present to carry out that decision. So I've told the story of the hog in South Texas numerous times, but that hog in South Texas was my turning point when I actually let down on that hog, when it was going to be another nightmare shot, uncontrolled shot. I let down on that hog because that's the first time that I got pissed off enough that I said, I'm not doing this again. And I let that shot down, gathered myself, started to draw my bow back. And that one time when I drew my bow back, that's when I said, I'm going to do this right. But I said it within the shot instead of before the shot. I said it within the shot, because you guys know that, you know, as that bull's coming in or whatever, you're like, okay, whatever decisions you're making, figuring out where you're going to stop him, all this stuff. When that bull turns broadside, your mind's like, oh my God, this is actually happening. I'm going to get a shot, right? And that's your turning point. If you let that go into autopilot, not going to go where you think it's going to go. If you then make decisions within that shot, as you draw your bow back and you say whatever it is you say to yourself, I say, I'm going to do this right. That brings you into the present and gets you through job number one. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to draw back and aim, get it done, watch to keep it. Now your pin's on the side of that bull. Now is the critical second. The 1 second in time after you believe the aim is complete, that's when most people punch the trigger. Within that 1 second, they see what they need to see as far as the 40-yard pin on the 40-yard bull. And it makes all the sense in the world that when you see that, you should punch the trigger. To your subconscious, like, there it is, let's do it. But you're going to have pre-ignition movements in there. It's not going to go where you think it's going to go. That's how these guys on TV shoot these whitetails in the guts at 15 yards. They've got every accoutrement on their bow that they could possibly have, and they still gut shoot these bucks at 15 yards. Right? It's because they're going into autopilot and they have pre-ignition movements in their bow. I'm sure they can drive tacks with their bow when they shoot in the yard, but when they shoot a critter, they're not making the same decisions. They don't have the mental blueprint, and they don't know how to decide to follow that blueprint. So that critical 1 second in time is a little hump that you got to get yourself over. I say to myself during that 1 second, here I go. And that here I go completely separates the jobs and the shot. So on that critter, he comes in. Oh my gosh, I think I'm actually going to get a shot. I know what decisions I need to make. Shoot this shot perfectly or I ain't going to shoot at all. Bull stops. Start to draw the bow back. I'm going to do this right. Got my aim. Once my aim is complete, here I go. And that here I go will bring you back into the present for the last, for the final time, because autopilot takes 3 shots to kill him. Original decision. Half draw moment. And critical second. Because once you say, here I go, that reminds you of all those things that you're supposed to do in your shot activation movement. Get that deep hook. Talk myself through it. Here's what I'm going to say. Here's how I'm going to say it. And it's amazing how present you can be in this shot. And when I shoot at critters now, I almost giggle to myself. Because I know that when that grip sear pops, I'm going to shoot a controlled arrow on a critter, and that is very powerful information, fellas. It's very extremely powerful to know you know, especially backcountry hunting, like what you guys are promoting, right? You hike your butts off and do all this work to get that one shot. And you're 10 miles in, whatever you're in, right? You get that one shot. You cannot risk. You can't leave it to hope. You can't go on that backpack hunt and go, man, if I get a shot, I hope I do good. You have to be able to predict your own future in shot control. You can't predict whether you're going to hit the critter perfectly because there's all the factors of limbs and wind and critter movement and all that stuff. But you have to be able to predict your own future in shot control.
Steve, besides just wanting to listen to this again and I'm sure go back through the info, what's a takeaway? What are you thinking? How do you think you're going to integrate some of this moving forward?
Yeah, I said I got to be your classic case of this scenario. And it's funny since I've switched to that thumb trigger, I can aim now. And I'm getting more movement than I want, but the second I decide to go, I punch the trigger. Is exactly what you said. You put the 40-yard pin is right on the dot that you want to hit at 40 yards, and then my mind takes over and says, it's there, shoot. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for me, that next step is that process of slowing it down at that moment and coming up, I guess, with some type of mantra of, you know, squeeze, 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 or something like that. So what's the best way for me to implement that? You know, I'm at that stage now. Is it just if I go out there and make 5 bad shots, should I put the bow down and come back an hour later? Should I, you know, how do I get past that mental block that I'm at?
Steve, you and everybody else has the opportunity to change your life in one shot. You have to ask yourself, why would you ever shoot a bad shot? I mean, no matter where you're at, I know that there's nobody with a gun to your head making you shoot that shot.
Right.
But you got to make these decisions, right? Mm-hmm. You have to decide the original decision. I'm going to shoot this shot perfectly or I'm not going to shoot it. And here's exactly how I'm going to do it. Job number one, I'm going to draw back and aim, get it done, watch to keep it. It sounds like you can do this so far, right? In your thumb trigger, right?
Yep. Yep.
Job number two, you're going to put your concentration into the movement that makes your shot go off. Now you're going to have to decide with that thumb trigger, are you going to do it through hand rotation? Are you going to do it through back tension? Or what is your movement going to be?
Okay.
Let's say it's going to be back tension to start with because that's an easier movement for you to evaluate, right? Mm-hmm. I need to set that trigger extremely hard, right? Set it where, I mean, you're going to try to punch it and it ain't going to go off, right? So okay. whatever thumb trigger you got, set it as hard as you can make it go, right? So draw back and aim, get it done, watch to keep it. Then set your thumb on that trigger and set an initial pressure. And then I need you to start pulling with your back, right? And so you're pulling with your back and you stay in that movement until, remember, one of two things happens.
Yep.
You have an error in your thought process. You're thinking, God, when's this thing going to go off? Or you're thinking, God, my sight's moving all over the place. And if that happens, if you have that error in your thought process, get your thumb off that doggone thing and let it down. And then ask yourself some questions. Number one, what was I thinking about? Number two, what was I saying? Number three, could I have stopped it? Number four, what decisions did I make or not make in that particular shot? All right. So your other option is the bow goes off. Right? Mm-hmm. There's no in between. There's no option of you punching the trigger. That's not an option, right? So if you shoot that perfect surprise break, or let's say you can't even make the thing go off, you're shaking like crazy and you go, oh, I just had an error in my thought process. Get off it, let it down. I mean, your growth as an archer is going to be exponential in one shot, because what you did with that one shot, or non-shot, if you will, if you let it down, is you're going to get the blueprint of how you did it. Hmm. And then once you have the blueprint, by asking yourself those questions, why in the world would you ever go back to where you came from?
<You know? laughs> Right.
Like, I ask people, you know, once they understand the science, they go through the clinic, and I say, okay, if I asked you to sign your name perfectly, why would you ever do it incorrectly again? If you know exactly how to do it. Because now the decisions become easier and easier, right? That decision of I will shoot this shot perfectly or I will not shoot it at all becomes a no-brainer, because you shooting it imperfectly, it's not even an option.
Right.
Right? But you can't go into any instruction expecting it to work for you, or buy a new release expecting it to work for you. It doesn't do anything. Right? Yeah. You have to work for it, but you got to know how to do the work. And that's what I teach people how to do at Iron Mine Hunting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to get in the backyard here and shoot.
Yeah. Ooh. That was a great summary walkthrough, Joel. You just, you mentioned Iron Mine Hunting. Want to make sure that listeners can catch you over there. It's ironminehunting.com, right?
Right. Yes, okay. Sir.
And just to give us, like, if you give us a, you know, 2-3 minute rundown of what exactly you have to offer for guys who want to learn more, take a course. I know you have, what, live events, you have online coaching. Just kind of give us the rundown of exactly what you offer through Iron Mind Hunting.
I've got live events that I do. If you go to the events page on there, you'll see what is scheduled and what's upcoming. I'm going to be at Total Archery Challenge here next week. Then I'm going to Georgia. Then I'm going to Pennsylvania and going all over the place. So there's live events. I have those all over the country. If people get a group of folks together, a group of their buddies or whatever, and they want me to fly to them, I certainly do that. There are some minimums for that, of course. And then I have an online course that I developed where all this stuff is online, where, you know, you can get phone consultation where you call me if you're having an issue after taking the course, or if you want to send me videos of your shooting or whatever. That's all available on the website. I've written a book regarding all these things, and you know, I'm big in having credibility, right? I don't expect you to believe anything that's coming out of my mouth. I have to show that I can do that too. I have to practice what I preach. So I go through every release aid. I mean, I go through a ton of release aids on there. There's an entire compound release track there on the online course. There's this compound release track. There is a traditional archery track where we're talking about psychological triggers and mechanoreceptors and how all that stuff works. You know, my goal is to get people to be self-sufficient in the diagnosis and treatment of their own shooting problems. And, you know, it's never – that phone call that comes in every now and again and says, hey man, your system's not working for me. I tell them flat out, I say, it never has worked for you. When's the last time you let your shot down? Well, I used to do that, but I don't really do that anymore. That's because that little slip, right? I just got off the phone with a guy right before this call. And he told me about how he fell apart in a tournament. And I said, well, did it happen suddenly, or what shot did it happen on? He said it was the second shot. And I said, well, what happened on the first shot? He said, well, I ran my process on the first shot, but the second shot, you know, I shot without getting through my clicker. I said, well, what was different in the blueprint? He said, well, I figured I did it the first time, I could just do it again. As soon as you think you've got it, the subconscious gets a little smirk on his face. He goes, oh yeah, we got it. I'll protect you, buddy. Right? So you can't slip. Every shot requires the same decisions until that decision becomes the norm. Right? You shooting a perfect shot has got to become the norm. And then if you have to shoot at a moving critter or whatever, don't worry, you're not going to forget how to punch the trigger, right? Yeah. But even your trigger punch shot's going to be much more controlled, but then you have to be able to go right back to closed loop control systems. So we talk about all this stuff in the online courses and the live events and in the book and all that stuff. So, you know, it's kind of my life quest to allow people to get to where I am in my archery shot. I want people to have that control, and it's there for the taking, but there's so many fallacies in archery instruction and shooting instruction in general. It's, you know, don't waste your time. You know, if you take my course and you think it's a waste of your time, then by all means, I will refund your money. I've never had anybody go, this is all hogwash, and it just doesn't happen that way. I'm not talking about Joel Turner's opinion. I'm talking about the science of how things really go. And trust me, I've been there and done that. And, you know, I value my credibility very readily. So, you know, I will demo anything you want me to demo. I will shoot it, and I will shoot it with control no matter what. And I'll tell you exactly how I did it. And so that's I pride myself in being able to do that. So
that's great. Awesome. Listeners, you heard it. So go check it out if you're interested in learning more, want to get into one of those courses, ironmindhunting.com. Joel, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I know that it's been a lot of information, a lot of good information that not only is for the listeners, but for us to apply personally. We're excited to get out and do it. So thanks again.
Cool. Thank you, fellas.
Well, that is a wrap. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Once again, if you're enjoying this show, we would love to see a review from you on iTunes, or you can contact us directly by email by sending your message to podcast@exomountaingear.com. We always welcome your questions, comments, or feedback. Again, you can check out this episode, subscribe to future episodes, and see all previous episodes, as well as learn more about Joel and his courses by visiting exomountaingear.com/podcast. And you can also find Joel directly at ironmindhunting.com.